Is everyone back and ready to go? Okay. Good deal. Just catching up on your chat. All right, let me share my screen again and we'll pick up where we left off. Okay, so now let's talk about the difference between shoulding and repressed or agency, not repressed, but just agency. So this is just a question. This is not something that I've made a decision about. It's definitely something we can chat about more at the end if y'all are interested. But I kind of had this, I don't know, rabbit trail download thought situation that was like, I wonder if shoulding is a manifestation of unintegrated guilt. As we're talking about all these other unintegrated emotions, I was like, I wonder if shoulding, like shoulding on ourselves or shoulding on other people, is a manifestation of our unintegrated guilt. So remember, our integrated anger, assertiveness, boundaries, courage, leadership, motivation, protection, integrated perseverance, industriousness, resourcefulness, grounded productivity, sticks with it, knows when to stop or leave. Integrated judgment, discernment, pausing to weigh all options, grounded decision making, taking it slowly when needed. And shame, bringing us back into integrity, calls us to responsibility and accountability. So Brené Brown says, shame says, I am bad, and guilt is, I did something bad. So go with me down my like weird rabbit hole download thought situation. Have you ever allowed yourself to feel guilt? A lot of times when we feel guilty, we unconsciously react to it. And that can look like doing stuff out of obligation. So then guilt becomes people-pleasing. So then we think we don't feel guilty anymore because we just did the thing that pleased other people. Rather than what if we noticed when we felt guilt? And before reacting by pleasing the other person, we actually allowed ourselves to feel that guilt without fear, without judgment, and be curious about it. That's just an example of one way that we feel guilty and how we react versus how we can respond to it. So, what have you practiced? I need to change this to somatic listening. What have you practiced somatic listening when you felt guilty? I believe there's truth in everything, everywhere. So, for instance, anger, even when it's unconscious, tells a truth that our boundaries have been violated, or that we feel unsafe. Unworthiness tells a truth about our time when our needs were unmet, even though it's not true that you're unworthy. The feeling of unworthiness speaks to a time when our needs went unmet, and some part of us thought it meant it was because we didn't deserve it. The fragmentation, the ego stories, and the patterns developed along the way. So, what can be the truth in the guilt that we feel? All emotions and sensations are messengers. Guilt is no different. If we can feel guilt without fear, it will show us where we need to take responsibility but aren't yet. It will show us where we aren't making conscious choices. For example, if I feel guilty because I'm not exercising and moving my body, it's because I'm making the choice not to exercise and move my body. So the guilt actually serves a purpose to be like, hey, you're still choosing this thing that is the opposite of what you want. Guilt will show us where we haven't kept promises to ourselves or taken care of ourselves in ways that we know are supportive or ways we haven't kept promises to others. Integrated guilt can bring us back into integrity too, because it is within integrity to be responsible, accountable, and conscious of the ways you could be hurting yourself or others. So, unintegrated guilt, is it shame because continued unintegrated judgment slash questioning slash second guessing about should I say something? Should I not? What do I say? Freeze leads to collapse. Like, is that why we feel shame? Because there's been this judgment, this second guessing, this guilt all along about should I do this? Should I not? What should I do? Should I like freeze, right? Like, is that leading to shame? Again, this is just an idea that I'm sort of still trying to work out. But I could see how integrated guilt would be a way that we use guilt to take responsibility for ourselves, to apologize and repair willingly, a willingness to be held accountable, knowing that shame is worse to feel than the discomfort of personal responsibility and choice. I think that when we allow ourselves to really feel guilt and let it be a messenger to lead us away from shame and away from collapse and into what we know is within our character is really beautiful. But so many of us are not even willing to feel our guilt. We just immediately react to it. So I'm curious what you guys think. If you have responses in the chat, can look at those, or if you want to talk about it during the Q&A, we can do it then. I'll look at the chat. I think Deborah looks like she's typing. So yeah, what do you guys think about this idea of feeling guilt and letting it be a messenger? Being able to discern when the guilt is like organic and like maybe a necessary messenger, and when the guilt is like a facet of people pleasing or a facet of living out of obligation or trying to compensate for something, you know, something like that. Lenka says spot on. Thanks, Lenka. Yeah, Deborah, me too. All feelings are messengers. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, I'm gonna close the chat and move on. Unless it's a kid on the bus. Yeah. If the guilt kid is driving, that's when we need to be, you know, I mean, we need to be curious either way, but like we need to be able to discern, is this guilt leading me to integrity or is this my guilt kid on my bus who's running the show? Alex is still letting it land, but I can see already where it could be around taking responsibility, but then I also have a pattern of over responsibility and perfectionism. Yeah. So to the extent that you have a pattern of over responsibility and perfectionism, is to the extent that you're going to feel a lot more unintegrated guilt because you're feeling guilty over things that aren't even your responsibility or maybe not even your business to feel guilty about, right? All right, let's keep going. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. So there's more to think about repressed agency that we don't have time to go into today. But in the movement example I used earlier, I was repressing my self energy. That intuitive, loving voice, that's self. Self is where the desire to move came from. Self is where the personal responsibility and grounded action came from. My choice to join a pole class came from self energy. My choice to get up every morning and go for a walk is fueled by self energy. Now, certainly there could be a guilt kid on the bus who's also trying to fuel those things. But I am responsible for keeping that in check because I know it no longer feels authentic for me to be motivated to do things out of guilt or obligation or should. It feels more authentic to do things from a place of higher self energy and desire. We can also repress parts of us that are not self. So we can repress our authentic self energy. We can also repress parts of us that are not self energy. We can repress inner child parts, right? We have lots of little kids on our bus. I mean, yes, those kids come with guilt and people pleasing and, you know, anger and bullying and all of that, but they also come with play and joy, right? And when we repress those inner kids, we're repressing that play and that joy. We also repress our inner teenager parts. I have experienced personally for myself that allowing my inner teenager to come out under the guidance and responsibility of my higher self has allowed me to rebel in really, really healthy ways. Like one of the ways that feels like a really healthy way that I rebelled, like it doesn't feel like rebellion anymore, but it certainly did whenever I started, is like my views on nakedness. And like growing up in the evangelical Christian church, like their nakedness equals inappropriate. Nakedness equals sexual. Nakedness equals, you know, like it's something dirty or it's, you know, whatever. And like in the last 9 years, I have had that challenged over and over and over. And I've seen how that kind of programming put a lot of shame in me about my body, and it put a lot of unnecessary discomfort about seeing other people's bodies that didn't really serve me. And now I'm like, I'm not like a nudist or anything. I don't like walk around naked all over the place, but I'm not afraid to take a naked co-ed sauna. Like, I'm not afraid to be naked in front of men who aren't my husband. I'm not afraid to be naked in front of other women. I'm not afraid to go skinny dipping. It's like, there's no swimsuit, like no swimsuit. Like, I'm not even kidding. It's the best feeling in the world. But that's just like one of the ways that felt like my inner teenager got to come out and, you know, kind of rebel. And of course, I have to be careful. If I'm going to go skinny dipping, I have to be careful to do it in a place where I'm not going to come across like a family that's camping with their kids. You know, like I have to be respectful of them too. I definitely don't want to get caught by the police. So there are certain boundaries that I have to have about it, but that's the self energy enforcing that. And then once we get inside that safe, appropriate container, then the inner teenager gets to come out and like take her clothes off and be naked, you know? And it's really, really important, I think, to give ourselves healthy outlets for rebellion. Non-monogamy was another outlet for rebellion for me. And I did it in a very safe way. But for me and my system, it felt really juicy and rebellious and like, oh, I'm doing something wrong, but it's not actually wrong, you know, like that feeling. So we can also repress certain emotions, such as when we start to feel anxious and we just immediately pick up our phones without even realizing it, and then we're on Instagram. The unconscious pattern was a protector against feeling anxious and unconscious repression of anxiety. So if you start feeling anxious and you are like, you don't even recognize that you're anxious, but you compulsively pick up your phone and suddenly without realizing it, you're on Instagram and you're scrolling, that is a pattern that is protecting you from feeling anxiety. Dissociation is protecting you from feeling anxiety, right? So that's just one example of emotions that we can repress. So we can repress parts of ourselves. We can repress emotions in ourselves. So here are some curiosity questions whenever you're becoming aware of your repressed agency in your process, because this is a very, very easy one to judge yourself on. When you start seeing where in your life there are choices you can make that you're not making, it can be very easy for that judgmental, shaming voice in your head to come in and start criticizing you and beating you up about it. And oh, you're such a sorry piece of shit, and you should have said something, and you know you shouldn't do this, and all of that. And those voices are allowed to be there. The goal is not to get rid of those voices. Can you also notice self energy alongside those voices? Can you hold all of it at the same time? And can you ultimately let the self energy be what makes the decision, not those other voices? Because the self is going to choose what's authentic. These other voices are not going to choose what's authentic. So here are some questions. What could I choose that I am not choosing? I notice I'm shoulding on myself. There's truth in everything, so there's truth here. I wonder what it is. So, oh, I should be eating less. I should be counting calories. I should. Maybe the truth in that is self-energy really wants me to take better care of myself. I don't feel comfortable in my body. I need to lose weight for health reasons. It has nothing to do with being in a bikini. It's just I really need to feel better in my body. Like that self voice can still be there. And so when you notice the shoulding, meet it with curiosity. The truth in that example is there's a part of me that really wants to just feel better. But that voice, that other part of me is trying to get me to go about it by like basically bullying me and calling me a piece of shit. And that makes me feel even worse. So of course I don't want to do it because my inner teenager wants to rebel against that parent who's like fucking critical all the time. Like, do you see how these little kids are like all working together, all inside of our psyches? Do I feel some unintegrated guilt? And that's where this shoulding is coming from. In my example, it was my guilt and shame for not moving my body for so long. Even though at one time I felt like I had really great reasons for why I shouldn't. Chronic pain is an acceptable reason, right? Except I really could walk and I really could lift weights. Like, and it didn't make my pain better or worse. The pain stayed the same. I wonder what else is possible here. It's another curious question. And then for those of us who have really, really powerful shoulding kids on our bus, just acknowledging, okay, maybe I should do this. How can I choose it with no guilt involved? I do have a responsibility to whatever it is. Would I stop feeling guilt if I just chose to take responsibility for it? Is guilt calling me into responsibility? Agency is your sense of what you can do and what you think you can do. It is your power to affect the future. Agency takes your desires, makes plans, and carries out the actions necessary to obtain them. Agency is the sense of control that you feel in your life, your capacity to influence your own thoughts and behavior, and have faith in your ability to handle a wide range of tasks and situations. Your sense of agency helps you to be psychologically stable, yet flexible in the face of conflict or change. Agency is your very own power, your ability to affect the future. Many people, however, believe they have very little agency in their life. They take the attitude that life has handed them their own certain circumstances. Things are what they are, and they are stuck forever. So, responsibility sounds like this. I recognize that I have unconsciously chosen to avoid my triggers. I thought I was protecting myself. I'm just going to give several examples rather than explaining it. So, agency, once you recognize that's taking responsibility for something, agency says, I choose to live with more awareness of when I am triggered. When I feel the urge to avoid or run away from them, I will make an effort to stay with that discomfort. That is making a conscious choice. It's active, not passive. So responsibility sounds like I acknowledge that my childhood slash trauma was not my choice, but I am the only one who can be responsible for myself and my healing now. And then the next step is agency, making a choice. And that looks like I choose to call in support. I choose to work with a coach or a therapist. I choose to read some personal development books. I choose to start a journaling or meditation practice. I choose to learn nervous system hygiene tools to assist me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Responsibility sounds like it hurts to admit, but I have expected others to change and modify themselves to make me more comfortable and help me avoid my triggers. Agency looks like I now choose to accept full responsibility for my state. I will equip myself with tools so that when I am faced with triggers, I have what I need to take care of myself and don't expect others to do it for me. And then you actually go learn the things. So now we're going to talk about boundaries. Our boundaries are more about ourselves than they are about other people. Once you choose to take responsibility for yourself, for your emotions, your reactions, your patterns, your triggers, and then use your agency to make choices that align with your desired outcome, you need boundaries with yourself to hold your agency strong when the old programming creeps in and attempts to pull you back into the stories of powerlessness, helplessness, victimhood, et cetera. This is where that integrated anger energy will serve you really, really well. All right, let's back up a bit. We're going to circle around to binary thinking and the nervous system. A lot of our brains do this binary thinking thing. I had a woman on my podcast one time. Her name is Sayana Wand. I forget which episode, but it was in the beginning of my podcast. And she said something that like blew my freaking mind. She said, a traumatized nervous system is a binary nervous system. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like I instantly knew all the truth that that meant the second she said it. I ended up creating a course called Overcoming Binary Thinking after she said that because I went so deep into it. It was so much fun. So, there may already be a voice in your head right now that's trying to create black and white scenarios about self-responsibility. Like, I have to be responsible for everything. And what if I need to be responsible for something, but I don't even know what it is, or whatever? There may also be a voice of fear or anxiety about agency. What if I don't choose the right thing? What if I miss my chance to choose and it's too late, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. It's okay if those voices are there. So, let's talk about our boundaries with others. Every person on earth has experienced hurt and harm caused by someone else. Sometimes that hurt and harm goes on chronically, and the ways in which we cope with it, which are temporary states, become permanent traits or what we think is our personality. It is hard to know what's yours and what isn't yours. It's hard to know what boundaries you need to be set with others and what boundaries you need to hold for yourself. So we're just acknowledging that this is complex. You are responsible for telling others how to treat you. You cannot assume that people can read your mind. You cannot assume that people are going to guess the right thing. I mean, sometimes there are general social rules with how we treat each other that revolve around kindness and consideration and respect. But sometimes people don't have those cues, or people also get triggered, or whatever else. So if someone is not treating you the way you want to be treated, you are responsible for telling them how to treat you. If you are currently in an actively harmful situation or relationship, your first boundary has to be with yourself that you will no longer put up with harmful behaviors from others when it goes on unchecked and unchanged. And other people are also allowed to have this boundary with you, that if your behavior goes unchecked and unchanged, they're going to have a boundary with you that they will no longer tolerate that. So, although almost none of this is black and white, eventually we do arrive at a binary. There's lots of perspectives, lots of complexities and nuances to hold, but eventually we do arrive at a binary, which is either I create space, distance, no contact, or limited contact with this harmful person, or I don't. It's necessary for self-protection to set boundaries. And if the harmful person for you exists in your past and is no longer actively harming you, but those patterns still show up for you, it's necessary for your self-thriving to have boundaries with yourself. Is this making sense? Okay, wonderful. So the trauma brain tends to jump to the most extreme conclusion or perspective. Okay. This example is actually taken from my comment section on Instagram from like 3 or 4 years ago. And I made a post that said, avoiding triggers isn't how we heal. It keeps us stuck, keeps us in victim consciousness, et cetera. And their actual comment was, so you're saying I'm supposed to be friends with my rapist? This is an example of the trauma brain jumping to the most extreme conclusion. Okay. Usually, when people say, so what you're saying is, it's not what the other person is saying. It's usually them taking it and twisting it out of context. Anytime anybody starts a sentence with, so what you're saying is, it's almost always like, no, you totally missed it. That's not what I'm saying at all. But this person actually said, they saw me saying that avoiding triggers isn't how we heal. And their trauma brain jumped to, well, if I'm not avoiding my triggers, then that means I have to go be friends with my rapist because I'm avoiding my rapist, which means I'm avoiding my triggers. And like, no, that is not what that means. So I want to be really clear. I am not at all saying that facing your triggers means go have coffee with your rapist, okay? Or whatever the extreme trauma brain likes to jump to. There is a difference between living in avoidance of triggers and setting healthy boundaries. Right? There's a difference. You absolutely can face and heal the present moment resurrection of past trauma, which is a trigger, without allowing those who have harmed you to have access to you. You can heal that trigger in the context of a healthier, safe relationship and not allow the people who caused you to develop the trigger to have access to you. There's a difference. Avoiding triggers keeps us from living in our sovereignty. Setting healthy boundaries is how we live in our sovereignty. It's how we distinguish between this is mine, this is yours. There's a boundary here. And sometimes that boundary moves, and sometimes that boundary is more flexible. When we avoid setting boundaries with others out of fear of what they'll think, fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of being too much, fear of being punished, etc., you are essentially guaranteeing that they will continue to treat you poorly. And if you have people in your life who are avoiding setting boundaries with you because they're afraid of what you'll think, They're afraid that you'll leave them. They're afraid that they're going to be too much to you. They're afraid that you're going to punish them. Then they are also guaranteeing that you are going to continue to treat them poorly. If you are repeatedly triggered in these relationships, your nervous system has to carry the load of that without any relief. And your resiliency, capacity, and flexibility start going down, down, down. Because remember, the nervous system is not meant to sustain stress for long periods of time. It's only supposed to be temporary. When you avoid triggers, you outsource your power to conditions outside of yourself and often outside of your control. When you set boundaries, you take that power back and you use agency to control the things that you actually can control, such as yourself, your choices, and your actions. And if something is happening in a relationship, like if things are bad enough, you have the agency to leave. Like if that means leaving your house or leaving that relationship or whatever that means for you, that can also be a boundary with yourself. When you expect others to change themselves in order to prevent you from feeling triggered, you are in avoidance. When you set boundaries, you are exercising your agency. Now, some people are like, well, I'll just have the boundary that they're not allowed to trigger me. Like, you are allowed to say, like, hey, when you do that, it really triggers me. And they're allowed to say, well, it's not within my authenticity to stop doing this thing. And so then in the relationship, you guys have to figure that out together. Like if you're choosing to stay in the relationship, then you have to figure out, okay, if it is not within your authenticity to stop doing this thing, but this thing that you do really triggers me, then and we're going to stay together, then I have to figure out what I'm going to do with myself while you do that thing. I have to go find some support to be less triggered by that thing. If you absolutely can't stay in the relationship, then you choose to leave the relationship because of that thing. There's always a lot of options, but the boundary is you exercising agency. So if this feels complex and nuanced, great, because it is. And if you are able to hold all of this complexity, that's a really great sign that your nervous system and your brain aren't defaulting to binary thinking. And if you're not able to hold it right now, that's okay. Like, it's all a work in progress. So here's a real life example. Okay. For the first 12 years of mine and David's marriage, David's brother, Matt, was pretty freaking terrible to me. He would use family gatherings and holidays, basically anytime a lot of us were together, to try to humiliate me in front of the rest of the family. He would jab at me, poke at me, make fun of me, try to embarrass me, try to shame me. Maybe he was trying to be funny. I don't know if he's one of those people with a really weird sense of humor. I'm not sure, but it didn't feel good for me. He even went so far as to say at Thanksgiving one time that David's whole family never liked me ever, but that he was the only one with the guts to say so. We then confronted David's family about this, and they all reassured me that they loved me and they were so happy I was part of the family. But that did not calm the fears and the triggered feeling that I had every single time we were around Matt. Because for 12 years, his behavior was predictably the same. And so I came to expect, like every family gathering, this is what I'm walking into. And it doesn't matter what I do. I tried to make friends with Matt, I tried to talk to him, I tried lots of different things. He just was not changing. So about 8 years ago was whenever I hard boundary drew a line. I posted on Instagram about loving Kacey Musgraves' song, Follow Your Arrow. It had not been out for very long at that time, and I had just come out of Christianity. And so I was listening to secular music a lot more. And I heard this song and I absolutely fell in love with it. I would say that that's really when my journey towards authenticity started. If you haven't heard the song, it's so fun and cute, but also her lyrics just have a way of like really pounding in a truth. So when I posted the album cover of the song on Instagram and talked about how much I loved it and how it was helping to set me free from different things, Matt left a comment on that post, and his comment said, "Follow your misguided arrow. My daughters follow you on this app, and you are setting a bad example of what a godly woman is to them." Because he and David's family were all still very much in the church, and we were out at this point. He then took his disapproval of me to the family group text and more attempts to humiliate me in front of them, criticizing me in front of the family, like saying that other people needed to hold me accountable for my behavior and how I wasn't being a godly woman and all of this. And this is my fucking brother-in-law, you guys. None of David's family ever defended me. None of them ever told Matt that he was wrong, nothing. And it took me freaking years to heal from this. And I'll tell you where I'm at with it now and where I have been with it for about 8 years. The trigger was not Matt, even though he was a dick. That was not the trigger. Matt was a mirror for the real trigger, which was being publicly criticized and humiliated in front of people whose opinion really mattered to me. Right? If David's family's opinion of me didn't matter, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal, or it wouldn't have been a bit as big of a deal as it was for me. I've healed the trigger clearly by the shit that you guys see me post on Instagram. I hope you can see that I am no longer afraid of being publicly criticized and humiliated in front of people whose opinions matter to me. Like that is fully healed at this point. Instagram has desensitized me to public criticism because I say a lot of things and do a lot of things that people really don't like. So if I was in avoidance of the trigger of, oh my God, I have to avoid being publicly criticized and humiliated and, in front of people whose opinions matter to me, then I wouldn't be on Instagram. Like I would totally avoid Instagram, or I definitely wouldn't say probably 80% of the shit I say on there. However, 8 years ago, David and I both set a big, rigid, unmoving boundary that we have not changed in 8 years, which is that we don't have a relationship with Matt anymore. He is no longer allowed in our lives in any capacity. We don't speak to him. We don't follow him on social media. He is blocked from following us. And we don't attend family gatherings if he's going to be there. And we've made that very clear to the family. Like, thank you for inviting us, but if Matt's going to be there, we can't be there. Sorry. So I healed the trigger of being publicly criticized and humiliated in front of people whose opinions matter to me without allowing Matt, who harmed me, to have access to me. Are we seeing the difference between avoidance and boundaries? Yes. Yay. So avoidance is I'm not going to deal with this, even if I know I need to. I'll keep showing up in this relationship, even though I'm being treated badly, because what I'm actually avoiding is being alone, dealing with the trigger, the discomfort of setting boundaries, et cetera. Boundaries equals it's not avoidance if I'm dealing with my shit, but refuse to allow this harmful person to have access to me. Okay. Now let's talk about boundaries with self, because I think these are even more important. Boundaries with myself requires me to get familiar with what being in integrity and what being out of integrity feels like. It requires being able and willing to see my own patterns and take responsibility for myself. And it requires energy, focused intention, and patience, and the understanding that I will get it wrong sometimes. Some of my boundaries with myself include taking care of my body. This is a big boundary that I hold with myself. It doesn't even feel like a boundary anymore. What was a boundary and a goal has turned into a way of living. I eat well. I eat enough. I move my body. I spend time outside and I pay attention to important health markers like my cycle and my sleep and my skin and things like that. Like, I really am diligent about my health. It does not feel like a chore. It doesn't feel confusing for me anymore. I love what I eat. I feel good about what I eat. I feel pretty good in my body most of the time, although I am trying to drop some weight because I don't feel comfortable with the size of my body at this time in my life. But yes, taking care of my body is a big boundary that I hold with myself. It doesn't really even feel like a boundary anymore. It's actually pretty easy. Another boundary that I hold with myself is taking care of and prioritizing my emotions. So I don't self-abandon. Sometimes I do, but generally I don't, right? We don't have to be perfect. I choose to feel my feelings without fear and without judgment. I have to practice what I preach. That is a boundary that I hold with myself, that I need to practice what I preach in order to be in integrity. I don't repress or suppress. I have to hold that boundary. I ask or pay for support when I need it. I don't deny myself support when I need it. I communicate to others what I can and can't handle. I don't watch media that makes me anxious. And I learn nervous system support tools. Those are all ways that I take care of my emotions. And that's a big boundary. I can't take care of other people if I'm not taking care of myself. Also, integrity is a big value of mine, and it's a huge boundary I have with myself. So it is a value of mine to be honest and vulnerable, to be authentic, to not post on Instagram when I'm dysregulated, to speak my truth, even if it means I lose something, to apologize when I've hurt someone, to be open to feedback from trusted people who love me. I'm very specific about who I'm open to feedback from. I hope you are too. Not everyone's feedback matters. When I don't hold my personal boundaries with myself, I feel it. I need and crave the structure of my boundaries. I feel better in my body and about myself when I hold myself to eating and sleeping well, being honest, being vulnerable, being authentic. It's very, very easy for me to be in my integrity because being out of integrity feels so awful and icky. So, boundaries like personal responsibility and agency are a delicate dance. Most often, they're not static. They move and they shift depending on the situation, depending on the person, just depending on your capacity at that time. For binary brains, this can feel really threatening. And there can be this sense of like, but what if I don't know what I'm supposed to do when I'm supposed to do it? So, a chronically dysregulated nervous system is letting you know where your boundaries may need to loosen or tighten up. You can be dysregulated because your boundaries are too rigid. You can also be dysregulated because your boundaries are too loosey-goosey. Your own personal complexity with boundaries, agency, and self-responsibility is yours to figure out. And you can trust yourself to figure out by how it feels. When something feels, even if there's a little resistance to it, but there's a spaciousness or a resting behind it, you can trust that. But you have to give yourself time and space to feel into that and not go so quickly to move through things. It is crucial that we learn to feel everything without fear because our feelings are precisely what tells us when something is wrong. Chronic background anxiety, depression, dissociation, helplessness, urges to control, perfectionism, people pleasing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are all communication from our bodies letting us know where we need to have boundaries with ourselves, with others, or with both. Because the boundaries, whoa, goodness, what just happened there? How did I get all the way? Goodness gracious. Sorry, you guys. I don't know what button I hit. There we go. Chronic background anxiety, depression, dissociation, helplessness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things, the patterns are communication from the body, the sensations, the feelings, the symptoms, all of it is communication to our from our bodies. And a lot of it is letting us know, like, hey, you will feel better if you will prioritize movement and sleep and nutrition and going outside. You will feel better if you prioritize getting off your phone and going and getting some sunshine or going swimming in a lake. Like, those are boundaries you have to have with yourself. And then the boundaries with others says, like, because I want to feel good in this relationship and because I value you, I'm going to communicate with you how I would like to be treated. Or what's important to me, or what's not important to me, or what I value, or et cetera, et cetera. All of this requires knowing what our values are, what our integrity feels like, and then learning how to communicate it with others or hold it with ourselves, hold that boundary with ourselves. Gabor Mate says, again, taking responsibility means recognizing that you're the one who can now begin to recognize those patterns, which until now have remained hidden and automatic, and start to do the work to change them, which is really just the work of honoring and literally embodying your own true authentic self. Your boundaries protect your authenticity. That's why they're so important. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's do. We didn't have a break that long ago. So let's do like 3 minutes, 3, 4 minutes. We'll come back at 25 after, get a drink, go to the bathroom, stretch, whatever you need to do, and then we'll start our Q&A.